I think it was as much as anything the businessmen themselves who saw an opportunity. Bloomington, of course, had already been settled in 1830, 1831. There were plenty of trees for lumber. There was a little bit of water. There were all kind of natural things. For Normal, it's out in the prairie. Many people, in fact, told Jesse Fell, when he first expressed an interest in the area, that no one would want to come settle here because it was too far away from the trees, too far away from any kind of natural setting of any value. But I think Fell and friends of Fell began to push the idea that they could create a town here that would be different than most pioneer settlements, that it would be moral, it would be definitely prohibitionist, it would be a place where families could be happy to avoid the sin, as it were, of the big city such as Bloomington. It's not a natural thing so much as it's a business-oriented opportunity that men like Fell and others saw to sell land and to make money.
Fell was a Quaker. His father-in-law ran a stop on the Underground Railroad in Dillon near Delavan and what became Tazewell County. How did that morality become reflected in town culture?
Fell was a man who, as you said, had a Quaker background, though he later, of course, helped to found what becomes the Unitarian Church here in town. He was determined, was very anxious to make sure to avoid the wiles of Satan, as it were. When he first even laid out what became on paper known as North Bloomington, that town would always be one where no alcohol was served, where good Christian men and women could live in comfort and peace. Fell was even insistent that there be no bowling alleys in town, that there be nothing that would in any way take people's mind off of their duty to God. Later, Fell was very careful to make sure that, as he said, human rights were always pushed. Fell, particularly after the end of the Civil War, encouraged African Americans, particularly the so-called free Negroes, to come from the South and settle in this area. Hundreds of them did. He was insistent that black students have a chance to be in the public schools, even over much criticism from not only some locals, but particularly from major newspapers in Chicago and elsewhere who saw this area as being a wild-eyed abolitionist community. At the time of his death, almost everybody recognized that Fell was not only the father of the town, but truly, in many ways, a great man. And part of that was because of his religious upbringing, I think.
Of course, the town of Normal came about because of the school, the Normal School. Mm-hmm. People may not recall what exactly a Normal School was and how revolutionary the idea was when it first came about.
I think you're absolutely right there. The whole idea of creating a, as we called it from the start, a university to teach teachers to teach was, as you just said, a somewhat revolutionary idea. In fact, the whole concept had come from the French Revolution and the Napoleonic period, in which young French men and women were brought together to learn how to teach properly the subjects so that there would be a normalization, a common theme that ran through schools, no matter whether it was in Paris or Marseille or anywhere else. Coming to America in the early 19th century, you first see this idea starting in states like Massachusetts, and then because of that, coming all the way out here to Illinois. Illinois State Normal University, as it was called, after it was founded in 1857, was one of the first schools, not only in the so-called West, but in the country as a whole, to try to create programs that would help those future teachers to be the best that they could be.
What are the other major developmental timeposts for the town of Normal in the first 100 years?
Certainly one of the most important early on was the attempt to bring to Normal almost every major institution possible. Fell had always dreamed not of creating just a teacher's college here, but of creating a great university, a university that would ultimately have law schools and advanced programs in just about every subject imaginable. In 1868, for instance, Fell raises more money than almost anyone else in the state to try to encourage the state to locate what becomes the University of Illinois here in Normal. So he would have a Normal school, and down the street he'd have an agriculture school, mechanical school. Fell wanted everything that he could possibly get, and that he fails to get these things is, I think, significant in a different way. It's also important, I think, though, to point out that Normal was always, in the early years, a school that, or a town rather, that could almost be said to be trying to play catch-up. Bloomington was bigger, had more cultural activities. Normal was always the little train it could, as it were. One that tried very hard and sometimes failed to succeed. For instance, in the entire 19th century, there was not one street that was paved until the 1890s, when part of Buford Street was finally paved. There were street lights for only about 5 years, and then the town decided it couldn't afford them anymore and had them all torn out. There were no major entertainment venues at first, other than those natural things, such as sliding down what was called Fell Hill in front of his house during wintertime. There was very little that could be said to be highly praiseworthy. The town burned many different times. In the 1870s, downtown had a huge fire. In 1890, in 1896, but voters kept going to the polls and voting down taxes to create a fire department or even to have a water supply system that worked. So it was always a town that thought big, but never was willing to push itself. Now, of course, we see just the opposite, with Normal rushing ahead in so many ways, but certainly in the early going, that wasn't true. I think it's also important, one other thing, is the connection between Illinois State University today, or Normal University in the days before 1964, and Normal. The two are just intertwined to the point where they really can't be separated. When ISU grows, Normal grows. When ISU shrinks, Normal has a problem. That's seen today. But it's also seen in 1870 or 1890 or any other date one wants to pick.
Have town-gown relations been always harmonious?
That's a very interesting question. For the most part, I think the answer is yes. And yet, yes, with a caveat, I guess, to it. You don't see anywhere in reading, for instance, the back issues of the Pantograph, any kind of conflict. You don't have Normal political leaders, for instance, say we need to do this or that to keep the university in its place or vice versa. But there was always a tension. The two, for instance, shared schools at first. The students who lived in Normal went to the university's model school, as it was called. But eventually, there were people who said, no, that shouldn't be. We shouldn't have anything to do with the university. We want to set up our own schools and have our own private teaching programs. And the same thing was true in other ways. As Normal, for instance, grew, it needed places for the students to stay. There were often nowhere. Some enterprising businessmen and women did build boarding houses. But for many, many years after the founding of the school, the great majority of students had to live in Bloomington and walk across or ride their horses or whatever into Normal every day to go to school, because the two simply couldn't work out agreements among themselves. The university often said, we need more of this or we need more of that, but maybe because they simply didn't have the money, maybe because they didn't want to spend the money, Normal often is reluctant to do so. And the school winds up on the short end of the stick, as one could say.
How is the past continuing to be a prologue?
There is a dramatic shift that occurs toward the end of the 50s and into the 60s. Many people find disquieting, but important. In 1956, the university brought to campus as its new president, Robert Bone. Bone had come from the University of Illinois, and unlike all of his predecessors, without exception, Bone was interested in education and in teaching, but he wasn't sold on it as the only approach. Past presidents before him had always said, we want only to be a teacher's college. We have no interest in expanding. Many of the students who had been coming back from the years of the war, or one should say wars, both World War II and Korea, wanted more. They were willing to come here, but they wanted to be able to study for something, in many cases, other than being teachers. Eventually, in 1964, the state of Illinois changed the normal designation. And that makes a huge, huge difference, because from the moment that ISU is created, you have a whole different group of students beginning to come. That doesn't mean that teachers and future teachers aren't there in large numbers, but many others begin to come as well. That changes the face of normal. It brings new blood into town, if you can use a trite phrase like that. And it brings new students, it brings new faculty. In fact, when I came here, in my case, 1969, one of the first people to greet me was a repairman at my home, who said quite casually that, you know, this used to be such a nice town before people like you came. I don't think he meant it in a negative sense. It was just that I wasn't from here.
So how did that change the culture?
I think that once you get people who are not wedded to the past, you get large numbers of people who see things through different eyes, as it were. They rushed for change. Let me give you the most obvious example, Charlie. Jesse Fell and his friends and others had insisted that there be no alcohol in town. One couldn't officially buy it. There were no saloons where one could go to drink it. And indeed, as Fell's hope was that there wouldn't even be bottles of alcohol in one's cupboard anywhere. Again and again, people in Normal kept reaffirming that belief. There was one occasion while Fell was still alive, that right after the incorporation of the town, the state wanted to have a charter, to write a charter for the town. According to the stories that seemed to be quite true, every male, every female, every child above the age of 10, every student at ISU signed a petition saying, we will be pure, we will never drink, we will not allow this. In 1934, after Prohibition ended, the Attorney General of the state, who happened to be Otto Kerner, decided that Normal could no longer officially be dry. He insisted that given the laws of the country and the laws of Illinois, ISU and or Normal would have to allow for alcoholic consumption. People rushed to the polls and voted, no, we will not drink. But now in the 60s, new people coming in were horrified. Not drinking? No alcohol? No place to get a nice martini or whatever? And almost from that moment, they began to put pressure on the town. We have to change. We have to be modern. We have to be forward-thinking. I'm not sure if being able to consume a case of beer makes one forward-thinking, but many people thought that very way. And eventually then, in 1973, that it does change. So I think that's just one example, but it's one of many that happened. People just no longer are willing to accept we are second best.
Paul Holsinger is a retired Illinois State University historian and the first lecturer in a series of addresses chronicling Normal 150, the people and places and movements of the Normal Sesquicentennial. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Charlie. I appreciate it.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.